Welcome to this week's Podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Podcast with a K from Beyond Casterbris. We've got a Doctor Who news update for you. And joining me, I'm Christian Corley. Joining me is James McLean. Hello, James.
I'm all right. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good too. I didn't ask how you were, but it's good to know you're well.
Well, yeah, I think it's British. As long as one of us asks the other, the ritual is considered
complete.
Complete.
Yes. Okay.
Complete. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. So. Oh.
It's very bright out here for 1 minute past midnight. I know in summer it starts to go dark early, but, you know, at the moment it's pretty bright out
there.
Pretty
bright, yeah.
It is.
Well, it's probably the souls of Doctor Who fans glowing with pleasure at the news of the impending DVD release.
That is a really horrible image. I don't know, that makes me shiver thinking of all these Doctor Who fans touching their bodies with excitement over the...
No one mentioned touching until you did.
That's what I'm imagining, because we know it's happening. They're all sort of rubbing their nipples with their male nipples. This is a proper podcast. We're not having any of that smut here, thanks. with pleasure at the thought of this monumentous occasion where they'll be able to complain about the animation. Sorry, what were you talking about?
If you say rubbing nipples, then I'm almost obliged by society to go, I'm dead sexy.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I think in my head, that was my image.
Okay, so Power of the Daleks, DVD release, animated reconstruction. It is happening. Dates. You want the dates before we start rambling on about stuff. So, 5th of November, we're told that it will be available from the BBC store online. Don't know if they're going to go with iTunes or not. And then there's a DVD release later in November on the 21st. There's also a screening of episodes 1 to 3 on the 5th of November. We are separately advised. So this is comes after months of kind of rumours after a clip from Power of the Daleks was leaked online. Do you recall that? Did you see that?
Yeah, I think I did, yeah. Wasn't that long ago, was it?
I think it was early August, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was when I was on holiday.
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, right.
I'm not one of these nipple-rubbing Doctor Who fans, or not in that sort of way. I don't care. I don't know. I mean, are you actually... I mean, because this is obviously going to give them... there's going to be a big buzz. They're going to big this... pushes with a big buzz, and Doctor Who fandoms, as I say, has this big thing about cutting out pieces of excerpts about Power of the Daleks from anywhere, laying them on the floor and then rubbing themselves and their nipples all over those pieces. That's standard Doctor Who fan practice, because they just love Power of the Daleks so much that, you know, it needs that sort of attention and love and a sexual appetite. Do you think they're really going to be thrilled about this, the animated thing? Is this something that's really going to galvanize them? Because we know deep down they want the original, which they can't have. Is this enough of a...
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the quality of the animation, doesn't it? And who's illustrated it, or who's done the character design, I beg your pardon. How it compares to, say, The Invasion.
Well, the animation, so, I mean, because as I say, I didn't actually watch the clip, but I saw people who seemed to be quite... People I almost respect, like Gareth Cavanagh and people like that. They seem to be quite down with it, down in the Doctor Who hood with it.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the feeling that the animation should be a little better than the... I don't mind. I mean, we've had this conversation before. Which animations did you prefer out of the... Because I quite like the sort of rotoscopy sort of feel of the Reign of Terror, but some people like the sort of little more flat.
I like the Reign of Terror, and I like the Invasion, but then...
Yeah, but they're very different.
Oh, they are completely different. But then I like the animation of Sharda for what it was, or the Scream of the Shulker. So...
You just like animation, essentially, don't you?
Pardon?
You just like animation.
I just like animation.
Because they're like all utterly different.
I mean, it's not Disney, is it? It's not DreamWorks. It's not going to be Pixar. We're getting a kind of, it is going to be animation on a sort of budget. Very much in the vogue of British animation since time immemorial, I think. Would you agree with that? Because British animation has never been as, and I know some of these animations have been overseas, such as in Australia, but, you know, British animation has a history of not being particularly, and I'm talking illustrative animation here, as opposed to plasticine or claymation. But British animation has never been particularly developed or sophisticated, has it?
I think I'll let you string your own noose on that one.
Okay. Well, no, it hasn't.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's ultimately, yeah. And I mean, animation is a time consuming, project, isn't it? And it's
exactly.
I think the problem with the British has been, and it has been to some degree globally until the 1990s, really, until it's hard to say, isn't it? I mean, Disney's always, obviously, as you say, the Disney films have always had the niche of being of respectability in animation, and to some degree there's been cult value in Looney Tunes, but beyond that, animation has always been considered quite low value in terms of television, certainly.
Yeah.
Until about, as I say, about the 90s, when you get the sort of influx of manga starting to move over to the west.
Yeah, the manga stuff, you know, the Japanese found, and the Koreans found a way of animating on a budget that was effective, whereas the British didn't really do that.
Well, I suppose, to be fair, I mean, the Americans have been doing it as well. I mean, Filmation had started to learn the rules that Tatsunoko and sort of Astro Boy had started to pioneer in Japan, where you can, as we've said before, you can limit the amount of animation you need to, the cost of the animations, by sort of doing sort of just some lip movements, being very careful on your, you know, doing long pans with of artistic shots and all these sort of ways, and making it seem stylish. Well, Filmation and Hanna-Barbera perhaps did the opposite. They sort of learned how to do these things, but because it was considered low value in the States, you know, children's domain, it never really had that much. That's not fair, really. I mean, Filmation did have a very good style to it. And when we talk about Filmation, we're talking about things like He-Man, Master of the Universe, Tarzan, Space Sentinels, Flash Gordon, and Star Trek animated series. They all had a certain style to it, but they were considered valueless, really, by culturally valueless. They weren't considered to be anything major. So yeah, you're right. I think until manga came over and you saw this animation treated seriously, as it had been with Astro Boy and had been by Disney, but only for films. I think, yeah, you saw a change. In the BBC, but yeah, you're right. In Britain, we never really, I think, because we sort of went a different way, didn't we? Because we'd sort of had, as we will know, as 40-year-olds, as we grew up, it was animation done through sort of stop animation model techniques, which is where the British had become, I wouldn't say pioneering, but had a reputation. When you talk about Flumps, I don't know why the Flumps came up first.
No, the Wobbles,
you know, sort of Aardman, the Clangers, all this sort of stuff that, you know, the great Wallace and Gromit, and on into the stratosphere. So that's where we've gone. But I think you're totally right. I know this is a bit of a rambly conversation, but I think it's quite interesting. You're right that as the British never really have developed a sort of a style, or it doesn't feel like there's been a real industry around, a mainstream industry around animation as a 2D flat sort of cell form.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's just interesting that we explore the global situation there. Because it is interesting, because animation has always been devalued, hasn't it? From an adult's perspective, kids love it, but adults never do. And I think that's very interesting. I mean, like, we'll go back to the Star Trek, when Star Trek tried in the 70s, early 70s, with Filmation. And they'd hoped to have an evening audience with it. They were very pushy that Filmation didn't actually put Roddenberry and Co. didn't want the kids sidekicks with Star Trek crew for a cartoon. They wanted to see if they could get it for an evening slot, but of course it was pushed to Saturday mornings.
A child in Star Trek.
Well, that was the idea, was to do the Orko sort of thing, you know, where you'd have a load of kids. In fact, they even had the model sheets for those kids. So, yeah, I think it's always been so devalued, and it is interesting now where it's... I still think it is devalued,
even though in a world with The Simpsons and Family Guy and South Park and things.
Well, it's a comparative thing, isn't it? Especially with things like this with Doctor Who, is that you've got a real, you know, real life is, because especially Doctor Who, because there's a, you know, the canonicity thing in value is really prominent, isn't it? Is that people will always put television first, that's priority, and then they'll have sort of rungs of where sort of animation would sit, where audio would sit, where books would sit, where comics would sit, and animation tends to be hit down the list actually. People don't like it, and I think the reason is, obviously, is even if you've got things like when David Tennant did his, and as you say, we've got with Power of the Daleks, you, even though you have that real actor interface there, I think it's because it sort of consolidates its idea of how it should look, and the person can't sort of conjure that themselves. People either like to see it real, as in people, or like to imagine it. So I think, in a weird way, BBC Audio, Big Finish, will have a higher rung canonicity than this would, even though it's got, you know, Troughton and Co. in the original audio track.
Yeah. The well, you mentioned the Tennant ones there, and there was, I think we've discussed these in the past on the podcast with a K.
Probably. I think most likely the past, because we're not doing it now, and I
didn't do it in the future.
Can't say we've done it in the future.
Yeah, no, we can't say that yet. So there is a, I mean, there's two Tennants, isn't there? There's Dreamland, which is kind of the 3D CGI animation.
Yeah.
And there's the Infinite Quest. And the Infinite Quest is infinitely more charming and interesting visually than Dreamland, I think, because there are problems with 3D models and budgets and animation and lip sync and things like that that you don't have those problems with the more 2D style of Infinite Quest, is there?
It's funny, isn't it, that? Because as you say, I mean, Dreamland is the far more ambitious animated project. I mean, you could sort of say that with Dreamland, the balance between what is, you know, what is dominant there is as much animation as the story, while in Infinite Quest, you really feel it is the story and the animation's there to support the story. You know, it's quite simplistic. As you say, it's quite stylized, but it's still, you don't feel... But yeah, I think, personally, I felt Infinite Quest was more interesting. I mean, there's an interesting... Jason Mattel, an American academic who looks at genre, he talks a lot about how the cartoon genre and how it shifts in its cultural perceptions from its sort of high value in the, you know, through Disney in the 40s, and then by the 60s, it starts to move into this kids' entertainment as the stuff's getting recycled on television cheaply and starts getting relegated to Saturday mornings, and suddenly animation loses its cultural value. And it's, as we said, you know, by now it's started to return again. But not totally, because as I say, I don't think people like it when it's being used as... Because what we didn't say in this, but it's essentially what's happened, is it's being used as a proxy for reality. And I think that always... gnaws at people. They accept it because they've no choice, but they still see it as a proxy, so they can't really enjoy it for what it is. They're enjoying it for what they wish it would be.
You know, you can switch on British TV at any time of the day and see a cartoon. Some of them are CGI. Pretty much every cartoon that's created now is done on computer anyway, so I don't know whether you want to have a little debate with yourselves, Doctor Who fans, as to whether those are CGI or not. It's really not for the purposes of this podcast. But what you'll find, interestingly, is a lot of these animations, these cartoons, are apparently British because they've got British voices. But it turns out if you read the credits, you'll find they've got a British writer, maybe a British producer, but they're actually co-productions with lots of other countries. And there's, you know, there's overseas versions that have the same stories and the same scripts but different dialogue, or the same dialogue but in a different voice, so it's like American versions or Japanese versions or Australian versions or whatever. I wonder if they, because we, you know, there was plans in the past for a Doctor Who cartoon, and it just strikes me that an international co-production would be the right way to go on that, just as a kind of a sideways step from our conversation, which is supposed to be about the impending release of The Power of the Daleks in its new reconstructed animated form. I've dug up a news report from The Mirror from a couple of weeks ago, In fact, it was last week. The Mirror claiming... Now this was published at least a week after the clip was online, if I recall correctly. The Mirror said that 6 long-lost episodes of Doctor Who are to be revived. Yeah, here's your little bit of shade, as I think the current term is on this, are to be revived as cartoons 50 years after they were aired. BBC Worldwide has commissioned a company to animate the 1966 classic 6-part story, The Power of the Daleks, featuring the first ever Doctor Who regeneration, which obviously happened in the previous story. So I think it's just cliffhangers in, doesn't it? It's not it's not the full regeneration. Although I can't recall. Patrick Troughton's first album as a Time Lord is the holy grail for fans, as it was only shown once in the UK and only sold overseas to Australia and New Zealand. You can kind of see why they've picked this particular story based on that, can't you? Because it's going to have a lot of interest here and in Australia and in New Zealand.
Well, I think also, I mean, it also depends on how this has been financed as well. It again, we talk about value, which I know I'm sure a lot of listeners think is quite boring, but I think is very interesting because it gives it a historical value insofar as TV history goes. So you've got a story which, as you say, you've got the iconic element of the Daleks, but you've got the fact that it got very limited airplay. And it got very little global airplay or global sale. So it's sort of very niche and it makes it a perfect one for a restoration, which is essentially what this is. So I think that's another reason they've done it. And the fact that, you know, I know at BFI they do these sort of screenings anyway, but I think that, again, the fact that it's sort of getting its showcasing at the BFI as well shows a certain pride and a certain amount of British prestige that is considered within this project. And I wonder if that, in a sense, sort of is a sort of a way of resisting that sort of devaluing of the fact, as you say, as it's just called a cartoon rather than an animation or an animated version. It's a cartoon. The term is sort of got slightly low value. Yeah. So having it, as you say, is something which is not just British, not just something that's been lost, not just something which is iconic with Daleks, which is going to be popular, but also the fact that it has actually a historical legacy of being lost gives it more value in itself. So there's a lot of interesting things going on with it, and you know, I've seen clips of some shots of the animations, and I think the style looks very strong. I think it, you know, I think they're putting the work into it, and I think it's an interesting restoration. I do wonder whether it'll be enough for people and whether it will spoil. I mean, I remember when Tomb of the Dark, we've said this before, when Tomb of the Cybermen came out. And when I saw Tomb of the Cybermen, it never seemed to patch on how I'd read it in the nostalgia columns of Doctor Who Monthly, where the way people talked about it and blew it up into something so big and so claustrophobic. And I watched it and I didn't find it claustrophobic at all. So there's always that fear, well, you know, will it live up to will it devalue, again, using value again, will it devalue Power of the Daleks to fans because they will see it in a way which they've not seen it before. They may have heard it, but not seen it.
Interesting. So there's, you'll have probably seen clips from Power of the Daleks because bits and pieces of it did survive.
Yeah.
Things that were used on other shows, for instance, the cine film footage shot by a fan apparently from a TV. It features Ben and Polly, which is Michael Craze and Annika Wills, as the Doctor's companions. Patrick Troughton puts in a really good turn for his first story. It's probably, if it's not the strongest first appearance of a newly regenerated Doctor, it's certainly equal to the others.
Well, this is again an interesting, perhaps for another podcast, is what is a strong performance? Because his performance in the first one, from what I recall from the audio, because I have listened to the audio track, it is very different, quite different to how he establishes himself
later on. Yeah.
So, is it a good one in the sense it's inconsistent?
Well, what's good? Yeah, yeah.
Is exactly like McCoy is the same, although his is a pretty bad first one, but it's different how he turns out. You know, interesting argument. I mean, you could almost say that perhaps even Davison's is probably the most consistent with where he ends up going. But
regenerative instability. Instability.
Beyond
yes,
that, though, when he settles down in that episode, because you say that's intentional, his character is very much as it goes on. There's no real changes to it. While all the others, there are slight ones. Of course, Tom Baker goes here, there, and everywhere with his. So, it's very. Are you going to, how are you going to do this? Are you going to have to get it when it comes out, or are you?
I'll get it on DVD. I'm not one for. I don't feel compelled to play the BBC's game of buying from the BBC store. And I'm not an iOS user, although my wife is. You know, we have an iOS device and I have iTunes on my computer, but I don't want to be locked into iTunes, so I'll just get it on DVD when it comes out.
I mean, are you that bothered? I mean, would you have been as excited if it had been a cleaned up, a really crystal cleaned up audio presentation with? I mean, does the animation really add something to you, or?
Yeah, well, I think the advantage of the animation is that it allows the existing or the surviving clips to be presented alongside.
Yeah.
Which means you then get to see them within as close a context as you're going to see them.
Yeah.
So if it was audio only, then cleaned up audio only, then no, I wouldn't be as interested. I don't think it's something that I would probably listen to at some point, but probably only once. But a visual experience with the potential to experience the story as closely as it was intended back in 1966.
Do you think there's any feeling of bitterness in the sense that no one can help this, but there was a lot of hope that this would obviously be a missing episode that would resurface? I mean, Power of the Daleks was one that was mooted sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking of that. Yeah. It's well, I mean, it does seem as though it just switching to Omni rumor talk. It does seem as though we're not going to get anything new, doesn't it? It does seem as that what survived, that's it now.
It is feeling a bit like that. That maybe the stuff isn't quite as up to the quality, or you know, if they did get anything, you'd think if it was releasable,
yeah,
you'd have heard something.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we've definitely heard by now. I think the very best we can expect from that horde, or that hall, I should say, is that if stuff was found, then they've got it stored in such a way that it can be restored later, because the technology isn't around to restore it now. And that, and I think that is pushing the bounds of possibilities, unfortunately.
I don't know. Isn't what's his face appearing up in Manchester with
Philip Morris? That was last week.
It was last week, was it?
Yes. So, and I'll be speaking to our good friend Gareth Gavanna later this week to find out a bit more about all of that.
Excellent. I'm glad that I let in some sort of promotional.
Indeed. Yes. So that brings us to the end of this podcast with a K news bulletin from Beyond Casterbus. From James and myself, it's goodbye.